Welcome to this week's episode of Dead America. I'm Ed Waters, your host, and in this week's episode, we're going to dive into the topic of alcoholism and drug addiction. I am very well versed in those subjects. I come from a long background of not only myself, but my family, friends, and lifestyle that surrounds a family that has been affected by alcoholism. Let's dive into this subject just a little bit with some things that I found on the internet. Over at www.1920-30.com/prohibition, you can read quite a bit of information on the prohibition and the effects that it had on the communities involved in America during that period. In 1919, the requisite number of legislators of the states ratified the 18th Amendment to the Federal Constitution, enabling national prohibition within 1 year of ratification. Many women, notably Women's Christian Temperance Union, had been pivotal in bringing about national prohibition in the United States of America, believing it would protect families, women, and children from the effects of abuse of alcohol. Prohibition began January 16, 1920, when the 18th Amendment went into effect. Federal prohibition agents, or the police, were given the task of enforcing that law. While the government cracked down on alcohol consumption on land, it was totally a different story on the water, where they argued that ships outside the 3-mile limit were exempt. Needless to say, this technically was exploited by everyone, including the state-owned shipping line. Legal and illegal home brewing was popular during Prohibition. Some commercial wine was still produced in the U.S., but was only available through government warehouses for use of religious ceremonies, mainly for communion. Malt and hop stores popped up across the country, and some former breweries turned to selling malt extract syrup. However, the alcohol content was limited to 0.5%. Needless to say, home brewing became a popular hobby by 1921, and instruments became readily available to measure alcohol content. Home brews over the limit had to be heated to evaporate the excess alcohol and bring it back within the legal limits. Prohibition also presented lucrative opportunities for organized crime to take over the importing, bootlegging, manufacturing, and distributing of alcohol drinks. Al Capone, one of the most infamous bootleggers of them all, was able to build his criminal empire largely on profits from illegal alcohol. Enormous profits were acquired by individuals engaging in bootlegging and speakeasies, but many of these individuals who benefited by breaking the law lost much of their ill-gotten gains in the stock market crash of 1928. A large circulation weekly magazine The Outlook ran an 18th Amendment survey among its readers in March 1928, asking them for their opinions, both good and bad, about prohibition. The results of the survey were written up in an October 1928 edition of the magazine. Two things stood out. A substantial majority were still in favor of this great social experiment, and there was a growing conviction that it was chiefly official corruption which had made prohibition work so imperfectly. With every passing year, the number of repeal organizations and demand for repeal increased. In 1932, the year my mother was born, the Democratic Party's platform included a promise to repeal prohibition, and Franklin Roosevelt ran for president promising to repeal the federal prohibition laws. By then, an estimated 3/4 of American voters and an estimated 46 states favored repealing prohibition. In 1933, the legislators of the states ratified the 21st Amendment, which repealed Amendment 18 and prohibited only the violations of laws that individual states had in regards to intoxicating liquors. Federal prohibitionary laws were then repealed. Some states, however, continued prohibition within their own jurisdictions. Almost 2/3 of the states adopted some form of local option which enabled residents to vote for or against local prohibition. Therefore, a time 38% of Americans still lived in areas with prohibition. By 1966, the year I was born, however, all states had fully repealed their state-level prohibition laws. Before we get into my personal experiences with alcohol and drug-related issues, let's take a look at some of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. Alcohol use in the United States. Prevalence of drinking. According to the 2015 National Survey on Drug Use and Health, 86.4% of people ages 18 or older reported that they had drank alcohol at some point in their life. 70.1% reported that they drank in the last year. 56% reported that they drank in the past month. Prevalence of binge drinking and heavy alcohol use. In 2015, 26.9% of people aged 18 or older reported that they engaged in binge drinking in the past month. 7% reported that they engaged in heavy alcohol use in the past month. Alcohol use disorder, AUD, in the United States. Adults ages 18 plus, according to the 2015 NSDUH, 15.1 million adults ages 18 and older, 6.2% of this age group, had AUD. This includes 9.8 million men, 8.4% of men in this age group, and 5.3 million women, 4.2% of women in this age group. About 6.7% of adults who had AUD in the past year received treatment. This includes 7.4% of males and 5.4% of females with AUD, alcohol use disorder. With youth ages 12 through 17, according to the 2015 NSDUH, an estimated 623,000 adolescents age 12 through 17, that's 2.5% of this age group, had AUD. This number includes 298,000 males, which is 2.3% of males in this age group, and 325,000 females, which is 2.7% of females in this age group. About 5.2% of youth who had AUD in the past year received treatment. This includes 5.1% of males and 5.3% of females with AUD in this age group. Alcohol-related deaths. An estimated 88,000 people. That is approximately 62,000 men and 26,000 women die from alcohol-related causes annually, making alcohol the third leading preventable cause of death in the United States. The first is tobacco, and the second is poor diet and physical inactivity. That's just astounding. In 2014, alcohol-impaired driving fatalities occurred for 9,967 deaths. That is 31% of overall driving fatalities. The economic burden. In 2010, alcohol misuse cost the United States $249 billion. Three quarters of the total cost of alcohol misuse is related to binge drinking. Family consequences. More than 10% of U.S. children live with a parent with alcohol problems, according to a 2012 study. Underage drinking. Prevalence of underage alcohol use. Prevalence of drinking. According to 2015 NSDUH, 33.1% of 15-year-olds report that they have had at least one drink in their lives. About 7.7 million people ages 12 through 20, that is 20.3% of this age group, reported drinking alcohol in the past month. That is 19.8% of males and 20.8% of females. Prevalence of binge drinking. According to the 2015 NSDUH, approximately 5.1 million people, that's about 13.4%, ages 12 through 20, that is about 13.4% of males and 13.3% of females, reported binge drinking in the past month. Prevalence of heavy alcohol use. According to the 2015 NSDUH, approximately 1.3 million people, that is about 3.3%, ages 12 through 20, that is 3.6% of males and 3% of females, reported heavy alcohol use in the past month. Consequences of underage alcohol use. Research indicates that alcohol use during the teenage years could interfere with normal adolescent brain development and increase the risk of developing AUD. In addition, underage drinking contributes to a range of acute consequences, including injuries, sexual assaults, and even deaths, including those from car crashes. Alcohol and college students. Prevalence of alcohol use. Prevalence of drinking, according to the 2015 NSDUH, 58% of full-time college students, ages 18 through 22, drank alcohol in the past month, compared with 48.2% of other persons of the same age. Interesting. Consequences. Research estimates each year 1,825 college students between the ages of 18 and 24 die from alcohol-related unintentional injuries, including motor vehicle crashes. 696,000 students between the ages of 18 and 24 are assaulted by another student who has been drinking. 97,000 students between the ages of 18 and 24 report experiencing alcohol-related sexual assault or date rape. Roughly 20% of college students meet the criteria for AUD. About 1 in 4 college students report academic consequences from drinking, including missing class, falling behind in class, doing poorly on exams or papers, and receiving lower grades overall. Alcohol and pregnancy. The prevalence of fetal alcohol syndrome, FAS, in the United States was established by the Institute of Medicine in 1996 to be between 0.5 and 3.0 cases per 1,000. More recent reports from specific U.S. sites report the prevalence of FAS to be 2 to 7 cases per 1,000, and the prevalence of fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, FASD, to be as high as 20 to 50 cases per 1,000. Alcohol and the human body. In 2015, of the 78,529 liver disease deaths among individuals ages 12 and older, 47% involved alcohol. Among males, 49,695 liver disease deaths occurred, and 49.5% involved alcohol. Among females, 28,834 liver diseases deaths occurred, and 43.5% involved alcohol. Among all cirrhosis deaths in 2013, 47.9% were alcohol-related. The proportion of alcohol-related cirrhosis was highest, 76.5%, among deaths of persons ages 25 through 34. That blows me away. Followed by the deaths of persons aged 35 to 44 at 70%. Wow. In 2009, alcohol-related liver diseases was the primary cause of almost 1 in 3 liver transplants in the United States. Drinking alcohol increases the risk of cancers of the mouth, esophagus, larynx, liver, and breast. I want to talk to you a little bit about cirrhosis of the liver and what it really does. Cirrhosis of the liver is a very nasty disease, and a lot of the times alcoholics will get cirrhosis of the liver. Cirrhosis is a late stage of scarring of the liver caused by many forms of liver diseases and conditions such as hepatitis and chronic alcoholism. Each time your liver is injured, whether by disease, excessive alcohol consumption, or other cause, it tries to repair itself. In the process, scar tissue forms. As cirrhosis progresses, more and more scar tissue forms, making it difficult for the liver to function. Advanced cirrhosis is life-threatening. The liver damage done by cirrhosis generally can't be undone. But if a liver cirrhosis is diagnosed early and the cause is treated, further damage can be limited and rarely reversed. Cirrhosis often has no signs or symptoms until liver damage is extensive. When signs and symptoms do occur, they may include fatigue, easily bleeding or bruising, loss of appetite, nausea, swelling in your legs, feet, or ankles, weight loss, itchy skin, yellow discoloration in the skin and eyes, jaundice, fluid accumulation in your abdomen, spider-like blood vessels on your skin, redness in the palms of your hand. For women, absent or loss of periods not related to menopause. For men, loss of sex drive, breast enlargement, or testicular atrophy. Confusion, drowsiness, and slurred speech. So, that is kind of the down low on alcoholism, a little bit on the prohibition, which never works, by the way. So let's get into some personal experiences with alcohol and drugs and my own personal thoughts. My grandfather, that was his time, the prohibition time, the Al Capone time, the 20s and 30s. My mother was born in 32. But my grandfather, he was blind because of alcohol-related disease. The need for that alcohol, it was pretty bad. My grandfather, the story goes, went blind from drinking rubbing alcohol. What would happen is they would pull the ends off of a fresh loaf of bread and they would pour rubbing alcohol down through the bread to filter that alcohol out, and then they would drink that. I don't know what makes the brain do such things, but it does. And the pressures of the world, especially during that period and time in the world, you've got to imagine what was going through their head just to get high or drunk. They needed a release. to get away from the societal pressures or the pressures from the family. A lot of pressures come with living life, and oftentimes we turn to drugs, we turn to alcohol to deal with them. I've got a long line of history in my family of alcohol and drug abuse. Not only alcohol, drug abuse, but violent abuse, sexual abuse, addiction in general. And I often look back at my life and I often wonder what actually happened in the lives of my grandparents and my parents. My father was a World War II veteran, and I remember thinking often, why do you drink so much and get angry at it? I could never experience what my father must have experienced during the time of World War II. The struggles that come out of that era, that transition period, my grandfather, my father, my mother, the things that they've seen and experienced in their lives, I often think about. My parents and my grandparents are gone now, but I still reflect on the troubles in our lives, in our family history, and what drives this alcohol and drug addiction. The focus on alcohol and drugs in people's lives, what really drives them to do this? If we look back during Prohibition, they tried to clean it up with moral ethics and punishments and law efforts. Well, I often look at that like with today's world. You know, we are dealing with the same sort of coming out of a prohibition period of this marijuana. And I often look at how many people made their fortunes off of prohibition, like Al Capone, all of those gangster era fellers. Then we look forward to my day and time when we are seeing the same thing with the marijuana, the opioid epidemic. Drug dealers, we really have to look at those people, the character behind those people, and how we characterize or portray those people. It really matters, because sometimes the crispy, clean professional is the very problem pushing these drugs. So there's a lot of parallels between today's world and the 1920s, 1930s world, and I often reflect that point in time to understand what is going on today. You cannot tell people they cannot do something like that and expect it to go well, because people, especially in America, are born free. They have this mindset of freedom, and they don't like people telling them what to do. My father was a tremendous alcoholic. Coming out of World War II, you know, I often think about it, because it's cheap and it's there, and it makes you forget about what life is throwing at you. It's really easy to get alcohol. I mean, you can get drunk so simple. You can get high so simple in this world. And then when you want treatment, I remember when I went for treatment and I wanted somebody to help me, I was told, you need $4,000 and then we can help you. Well, I immediately turned back to the drugs and the alcohol, because it was cheaper to get rid of my problems that way. if we look at what causes these struggles in life, we can start focusing and pinpointing how to fix the problems, the struggles that we face. You know, the number one struggle that people face, in my opinion, dealing with truth, dealing with reality, and pointing the finger at themselves. You really have to understand, addiction is because you are trying to flee from something. Something is bugging you, and it's easier to get high and forget about it. The main thing we have to do is look at what is troubling us. Is it our wife? Is it our kids? Is it our job? Is it what we have in life? You really have to tackle these tough questions to understand what causes drug and alcohol addiction. I have watched people die. I have watched people steal. I have watched people beat people up. I have watched people destroy other people's property. All because of addiction, drug and alcohol. Coming out of the drug addiction, the alcohol addiction, it is not easy to do. You really have to start relying on yourself. You have to start trusting yourself. And to do that, you really have to dive in and look at what makes you tick. Drug and alcohol will always lead to devastating consequences in your life. If you are going to escape life through drug addiction or alcohol addiction, it will only compile your troubles because it adds confusion. It adds the lack of temperance. It lacks the ability for people to get out once they get in. It's very hard, especially when you've been raised that it's okay. It's fun. It's a joy. It's not. It's an addiction. It's a problem. And I have seen enough destruction and devastation from lives, communities, and nations. Alcohol has been around historically since the beginning of time. Before the written history began, people were getting drunk or mind-altering chemicals put into their bodies to escape, to explore, to have fun. People tend to glorify and glamorize these things, but yet all they really do is destruct lives. The destruction that comes from alcohol and drugs, can't measure it. It's just too heavy, too long, too much has happened because of the combination of alcohol and drugs. Do you tell people they can't do it? No, you can't do that. It will never work. All that does is it exacerbates the issue and makes people want to do it more. So let's really study what is happening, and we really need to start talking about personal problems, these things that are hard to deal with, issues in our life, plaguing us, especially when we don't know how to deal with it and it seems so overwhelming. That's when it's easy to turn to these mind-altering chemicals, alcohol, and the life of destruction. There's a better way. Learn to deal with the problems, the issues, stand up for what is right, always go with truth, even when it's hard. And believe me, truth is hard, but you have to live it. And dealing with alcohol, drugs, tobacco. You know, cigarettes was one of the hardest things for me to quit. Compared to cocaine, tobacco was, oh my heavens, I could not get over it. You know, the only thing that really truly made me get over tobacco was I gave the gift to my mother that I was going to quit smoking for her. Thank you, Mother, because I can't take a gift back. It kept me from smoking. So you've got to develop ways to overcome. You've got to challenge yourself. You've got to identify what will make you stop. How can you do this? Tobacco was very difficult for me. I was a 2-pack-a-day person for years. And I still find myself patting my chest for that pack of cigarettes. After years of not smoking, I quit smoking in 2002. And what is it, 2019 now? So the effects of these drugs and these compounds that alter us, they have long effects that you cannot see. Sometimes these effects are so subtle that we have no clue. Life, it always casts a shadow. And what you've got to do is turn on that light switch, my friends. I remember days where I would go to parties. I have woken up in some of the most peculiar places because of drugs and alcohol. And I wonder, still to this day, how did I survive all of that? The drunk driving, the experimental drug use. Boy, life can really throw some things at you. And some of the struggles that I've been through, I have watched my stepfather, Al. He died of cirrhosis of the liver, but Al was a Golden Glove boxer in his younger days. Al was a Nez Perce Indian. A lot of Indians, they tend to become alcoholics. It's bred into them anymore. It's like the norm. But Al, he just wouldn't give it up, and he got cirrhosis of the liver, and I remember his belly swelling up to the point where his belly button was poking out. And Al, he did not like doctors, he didn't like hospitals, so he would puncture his belly to let those fluids escape. And I remember the scab from his belly button and how black and blue it was. And oh, I'll tell you, some of the things that I had to see as a youngster. But I remember taking Al to the hospital, and Al, he slipped into a coma and never woke from the coma. It's not a good way to die. I remember the moment on the radio, Creedence Clearwater Revival was playing, "I See a Bad Moon Rising, I Feel Trouble on the Way." Interesting song. As I walked into the room, Al passed away. So, yeah, to watch a man flatline, laying in a hospital, it's not a good feeling. It's something a kid shouldn't have to watch. And, you know, my parents, my actual dad was a World War II vet, as I mentioned earlier, and he was an extreme alcoholic. He died of alcohol. Me and my older brother, we went over to see my father. We knocked on the door, and my stepmother, she came to the door, and Christine, she immediately came out screaming, all in a panic. "Oh, call the ambulance. Your father's having a heart attack." And she wouldn't move out of the way. I remember my brother kind of really pushing through and moving that woman out of the way. And we all rushed back to the bedroom. Myself and my brother entered the room, and I remember seeing my dad lay in there without color, his mouth open, blood running from his nose, and pills in his mouth. It's odd. My stepmother wanted to bury my father in the backyard of her house. And it was apparent she had been sleeping with him. He was dead for quite some time, but my brother, I remember, said, "Go across the street and call the ambulance." So I did. I ran over, asked the neighbor, "Please call the ambulance. My father's having a heart attack." And that's what I remember. But no, it wasn't a heart attack. He had passed and laid there for a while. And me and my brother found him. I entered back into the room, and my brother was actually trying to resuscitate my father. I'll never forget that. And it's like, had to really say, "Well, yeah, he's gone." And yeah, for a child to see his father laying there like that, alcohol and drugs, and my father was not into drugs, but he was a severe alcoholic, and the devastation in the family still occurs to this day. Alcoholism runs rampant in my family, and drug addiction, it's been an increasing factor in lives of my family and extended family. Along with that comes prison, hospitals, a lot of drama, unnecessary sexual dysfunctions come from alcohol and drug addictions. I can go on and on and on, and I'm going to do more about alcohol and drugs and what it does to devastate families, to devastate lives, communities. And I'll tell you, and the popularity that all of it has, this feeling that you've got to do it. Where have we gone wrong? And how do we fix it? In my opinion, you've got to hit it with everything you've got, straight on. Truth, not lies. And it's not easy to quit. But to fix it, to stop the hereditary line that keeps doing the same thing over and over, you yourself have to take a stand. You've got to want to change this, and you can do it. Join us next week right here on Dead America, when you don't know what we're going to talk, who we're going to talk with. Thank you for joining us. Share, like, subscribe. I'm Ed Waters, out.